Sometimes all you can do is laugh.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Bball. Today we're going to be looking at news regarding small forwards around the NBA, talking also later in the show about my league pass rankings for this season. Now obviously I watch all the teams, but if I've got choices between teams and I've seen them all recently, I have an order in which teams I think are going to be the most interesting to watch for this coming season. So that's going to be something coming at the end of today's show. Michael Bolton, he is ready to go.
Let's get to it.
I think I've only got a couple of drafts left. I've in the 30 deep industry league is started today, and I ended up with the number one pick in that, and I chose Anthony Davis. That's a pretty good start. It's going to be a bloody long wait until I get back to my next pick at pick number 60, but I started off there doing another industry roto league at the moment. We're almost finished that one, and then I think I've got one more draft that is happening tonight with a bunch of people here from Australia. Sort of a local type league, and I think that's my last draft for the season, so looking forward to that one, getting off on which I have pick number 12. So we'll see how that ends up going. But today we're talking small forwards across the NBA. Thankfully, no big injury news has happened, apart from the injury to Dwight Howard's ass, which is considered not serious, and that's good. It looks like he might miss a little bit of time, maybe a game or two to begin this season, but nothing too outrageous there, nothing that should be making you look significantly at Yan Mahinmi as someone you'd be picking up, although I do imagine Dwight is going to miss some time throughout the season. I really love for them to give Thomas Bryant a go. I'm just not sure that they're going to do that, unfortunately, with Jason Smith and Yan Mahinmi and Markieff Morris probably all ahead of him at this point in the rotation for that center position. Let's talk small forwards now. It's what we're doing in today's show. We'll start, of course, with the fun guy.
I'm a fun guy.
Kawhi Leonard, who I think he's looked pretty good in the two preseason games. He's only played 19 minutes in those games, but 15-point average. The free throws are a little bit of a worry, shooting only 53%, but he has got to the line average of 9.5 times per game. I think, look, he's a bit rusty. He looks healthy. We've got him projected pretty high as on a per-game basis, the fifth overall player. I likely wouldn't take him at number 5, but I think he's a strong top 8 player for this season. I have him ahead of guys like Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, Damian Lillard. I think we look at, when I talk about my top guys, you have obviously Davis and Harden, then you've got Towns, you've got Durant, you've got Jokic, you've got Giannis, you've got Curry, you've got Kawhi. That's probably the basis of your top 8 there. And I think I'd probably have him around that 8 spot if I'm drafting in that area. But you'll often find him fall to 11, 12, maybe even into the second round, which people are quite scared of. And I understand they're disappointed with what he did last season. I don't have any worries that, A, he's just going to disappear from the team. That wasn't all of what it was last season. I think he's going to be fine for this year. And I'm pretty confident in a nice big season, as you'll see in tomorrow's show when we talk about award predictions for the 2018-19 season. I do need to tell you, though, about today's sponsor. They've been great in supporting the network, and that is Vivid Seats. So when you are looking for a great night out, whether it's a sporting event, whether you're going to go see an NBA game next week as the season kicks off, an NFL game, you're going to go watch the hockey as the hockey has started, baseball playoffs, or you're going to see a show, whether it's a Broadway musical, something in on the Vegas Strip, Cirque du Soleil, whatever it is that you guys want to go on. I saw that Lady Gaga has a residency in Vegas, and I'm going to be in Vegas next season, and as weird as this seems for me to even be saying this out loud, I would have loved to have gone and seen Gaga, but it doesn't seem to be tying in with my dates, unfortunately. Vivid Seats can hook you up with all of those events that you want to go and see. It is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort it by price or look for seats in the section or row of your choice. And to make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners to this podcast an exclusive promo code, which is Locked On, one word, and that will save you $20 off any new order of $200 or more for a new customer. So go to the App Store, go to Google Play, download the Vivid Seats app, and use that promo code Locked On to save $20 off your order of $200 or more. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Let's talk Jim Butler. Now, it's been interesting, to say the least, the news that has recently come about with the Mark Stein reporting from the New York Times that the Timberwolves have turned down an offer which is centered on Josh Richardson and a protected first round pick. At this point, the chatter is, and it is this complete, and I talked about this with the Suns yesterday, and again, stealing this from Danny LaRue, is the biggest competitive advantage in the NBA is ownership. And I can shit on Tibbs as much as possible, and I should, because he's bad at both his jobs, really. But Glenn Taylor is also completely incompetent. The general gist of what's going on is that teams don't feel that Tibbs and Scott Layden are actually truly engaging in good faith in trade negotiations. But Taylor also has the ability to pull triggers on trades, and he is still humming and hawing about whether he wants to pull the trigger on a deal, what he wants to do with Tibbs, who absolutely 100% needs to be fired. Taylor has a history of indecision in his term as owner of the Timberwolves, and that is coming to the fore again. And at this point, it looks like Butler is going to be back with the team. Now, Thibodeau has said that he will welcome him back with open arms, but you surely can't let this happen. He can say that for all he wants, but clearly, Jimmy Butler has reiterated again that he does not want to be on this team and he's requesting a trade. He will not sign there next season. Now, he also has said that he won't miss any games and he'll be there to play. But can you imagine that atmosphere? Just imagine the opening night or the first game in Minnesota for the season, and the crowd announces Jimmy Butler, or the announcer says in his starting line, Jimmy Butler. How is that Minnesota crowd going to react? Now, I have my thoughts on it. If you're a Minnesota fan, you're going to be in the arena. Are you going to boo the shit out of him? Because I think it's going to be a pretty hostile environment. And then they're also going to announce the coach, and I think they're going to boo the shit out of him as well. You can't. Thibodeau can say this as much as he wants, that Butler's going to be, we'll welcome him back and it's going to work. It won't. Because the crowd will not accept it. It will be absolutely hostile towards Butler, towards Thibodeau. And let's not forget the issue between Butler and Towns and Butler and Wiggins. So you're going to reintroduce that bullshit back into the room. I've heard rumors that the reason that Towns signed his extension because he was assured that Butler would be gone because those two don't get along. And there are significant rumors and reasons behind that, let alone, and some people, man, just because Towns is a pussy. He doesn't want to win. These young guys, mate, they just want to play Fortnite. They don't want to win. And that's bullshit. For a start, and Butler can say he wants to win, but there is ample evidence of Jimmy Butler being a shit bloke in many areas, and the conflict between him and Towns is not just due to a perceived lack of winning or the pussification of young guys. It's not what it is. There is something else involved there. I can't guarantee you, but I'm pretty bloody sure that there is something else, and from what I've heard from numerous people, there is something else there in that relationship between Butler and Towns, which is causing that problem. So not only are you going to reintroduce him to a team where the team's best player and franchise player doesn't get along with him, and you've got a coach and general manager who everyone thinks is shit at what he's doing, and then you're going to try and have that reaction on the court, it is just going to be nonsense. So Butler needs to go. He needs to be traded. I brought him up here just to update you on where the trade situation is going. I still think he's a pretty strong second-round guy, because wherever he goes, he's going to produce, whether that is in Miami or staying in Minnesota, he's going to produce. Now, going to Miami will reduce his playing time. He won't play 37 a night. And you can say, but he did that under Hoiberg, and I mentioned this last week. Yes, he did. But Hoiberg also does not have the balls that Eric Spoelstra does, and I don't think that Butler's going to come in there and demand that he plays those minutes, and Spoelstra's going to go, no worries, Jim. We're going to just break every rule of every tradition we've had in terms of running this rotation and play you all these minutes. He will play 34, 35 minutes. He won't be playing 37, 38 that he was in Minnesota. So that hurts him a little bit, but it might actually preserve him for the fantasy playoffs, which might be a benefit in that respect. So that's important. And the other, on the flip side of that, Joshy Richardson going to Minnesota, well, his minutes will go from 33 to 36, 37, 38, which is going to elevate him probably into a top 40 sort of a guy. It will bump Towns and Wiggins and Teague's usage up. It should bump Richardson's usage a little bit as well, but not massively. It's a big jump for Towns, and he solidly puts in as the number three guy, in my opinion, in that area. Wiggins is still a draftable player, despite how absolutely shitful he has been in the preseason. That ability to score, which, again, hasn't been on show, but I think it will be fine. He's not going to do anything else, and he's still a late-round pick. T gets a boost, and Richardson gets a boost if that trade goes down. And even if you're Joshy Richardson, how are you feeling now that you're just constantly being bandied about? How's that going to work? It just feels like it has to get done at this point, but there is just stark incompetence. And the report the other day, I think it was on ESPN, that Pat Riley and any children listening to this who don't want to hear swearing, you can tell them to mute it now. That apparently the word is that Pat Riley was on the phone to Thibodeau and told him to get his fucking house in order and hung up on him, and that would be one of the greatest conversations I've ever heard. And I hope that is exactly what happens. And knowing Pat Riley, you can put a fair degree of confidence in the words coming out in a very similar manner to how I just pushed them forward. Let's move and talk about Toby Harris, who has been excellent in the preseason. He looks like the Clippers' best player, although, to be honest, the other guy... In the preseason fantasy rankings at the moment, the number one player is Jim Harden. The number two player is the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari. He is an unbelievable late pick. He can get hurt at any point, and he could be the second ass injury guy behind Dwight Howard this season, no doubt. But love him as a late pick. But let's talk Toby, who's the ninth-ranked player in preseason, averaging 20 points in 26 minutes. 8 rebounds, almost 4 assists. He was a very, very strong rebounder before he went next to Andre Drummond. And anyone who plays next to Andre Drummond, they tend to lose rebound numbers. Toby's not going to get good defensive numbers, but his efficiency is absolutely through the roof. True shooting of 67% so far through the preseason. And I think he's going to be an excellent option in that third round, maybe even the fourth round for fantasy this season. And nothing that we've seen in the preseason would sway me away from that. Gordy Haywood, back rusty, of course, you know, looking a little bit not great in the preseason. Only 7 points per game on 25% shooting. It's going to be a rough start to the season. He is a guy that I would be absolutely looking at as a buy low player in terms of trades. If he struggles that first week and the shot's not there, people will think that it's going to be a permanent thing. And while it could be, the chances of it being permanent are really, really infinitesimally small. So Haywood would be a strong guy that I'm looking for. In that first week, if he struggles, you send out the low balls. You send Kent Bazemore for Gordon Haywood. You send out, who is someone else that's shit that I can't think of? You send out Jeremy Lamb, not shit, but, you know, not Gordon Haywood level. You send Rudy Gay for Gordon Haywood, those sort of deals. So I think that he's still fine around that 50 to 60 type of mark, but it hasn't been the greatest preseason for Gordo. Nick Batum, I like Batum a lot coming into this season. I think he's undervalued, an ADP of around 80 on Yahoo. His preseason has been pretty decent, I guess, in only 24 minutes per game, but the numbers are still there. Over 6 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, shooting 46% from the field as well. Moving up to that small forward position is going to up his rebound numbers, and also not having Dwight Howard there will help in that regard, and he should be a player that can push back at least into the top 70, but maybe even into the top 60. So I've been relatively encouraged by what Batum has done. Still just the 95th ranked player in preseason, but that's mainly because he's only played 23 minutes per game. So, for guys that were pretty interested in Toby Harris and Nick Batum and even Haywood, yeah, I think the preseason has been a good reflection on what we can look at. Maybe not as much for Haywood, for Harris and Batum. I feel pretty confident in the preseason stuff or all the off-season stuff that I spoke about in terms of their value. It seems to be coming together just nicely at the moment for both of those guys. Kyle Anderson, still dealing with a bit of an injury, unfortunately, in Memphis with a sore heel / Achilles. He's only played the one game, 12 points, 2 assists, 2 steals, shot the ball well, and that's sort of what we can expect from Kyle. I do think he's going to be the starting small forward. I do think he's going to play 30-ish minutes. I have my concerns about what JB Bickerstaff is going to do with this team. But Kyle Anderson, I think he's still a strong option. He's ADP's at 90. That's really good value to get him there. I think he's got that top 60, maybe even top 50 type of upside. I worry that he's not going to push to 33 or 34 minutes, but 29 to 31 should still see him beating that value pretty significantly. I talked about the Rooster already. Danilo Gallinari. He is averaging 20.5 points, 1.5 threes, 4 rebounds, 4.5 assists, which is astonishing for Gallinari. 2 blocks on 58% shooting from the field, 72 true shooting in only 25 minutes per game. I absolutely love this guy as a late round pick. I've said that already. His ADP is 135 on Yahoo. I think he's, on a per game basis, I think he absolutely destroys that. Total value is, I guess, where you're going to be concerned. But if you're wasting your second last pick, your third last pick on Gallinari, literally, who gives a shit? It doesn't matter. You grab him. And if that pick doesn't work out, that's what you use for waiver wire churning. And if it does, this is top 50, top 60 type upside for Gallinari. Not top 2 upside where he's currently sitting in the preseason numbers, but he is bloody good. And a healthy season with more familiarity with the players around him, I think he can be really good. And I love him, much in the similar vein to how I had Tyreek Evans as that guy that I wanted to draft in all drafts last season. Gallinari has taken that over for me this year. Jabari Parker, just absolutely atrocious defense in the preseason. The offense hasn't been too much better. He's played 23 minutes a game and averaging 8 points with 8 rebounds and 3 assists, shooting 24%. But that 24% number is clearly not going to stick. The defensive shitfulness, that probably will. And he's in complete tone deafness in terms of being asked about that. When someone asked him today, I should bring this up, that the exact quote from Jabari regarding defense, because it was astonishing, and it tied into the sort of stuff that he said in the offseason regarding defense and his thoughts on it. Here we go. Jabari Parker, this is from Cody Westerlund. Jabari Parker was asked if he's concerned with the Bulls' defense to this point. Much of his answer revolved around offense. Yes, it did. Are you concerned about the defense to this point, or do you weigh in the fact that a new scheme is being implemented and it takes time? Jabari. It's all the same, basically. It's just a matter of, like, trying to hit them back with a good offense in return. It's not how defense works. That's what I feel like, because we go in a lot of slumps too, and we have some good looks. It doesn't help that we don't make baskets, but we can't allow that to dictate our defensive energy too. Jabari, that's... A best defense is not then scoring a bucket. He is, and it is going to get worse. It will get worse when he is playing the three when Lowry Markkanen is back. So just brace yourself for that. The volume is there for Parker. I worry that he's not all that good. I still think he's fine as a late pick. An ADP out to the top 100 is no worries. But him playing at the three, this Bulls team, who people were thinking are going to win 40 wins, they need to get their hand off it, because that's not going to happen. And Parker's efficiency will come back up, but man, that defense is a disaster. I still think he's an interesting guy to take a look at. Rudy Gay, ADP is real low, 140. I think he's a top 100 guy, of course. Now with DeJounte Murray going out, maybe that does help Gay a little bit more, because it reduces their ability to play more three-guard lineups. He might get a little bit more in terms of rebounding, because DeJounte was pretty aggressive in that area. But really, yeah, his value is pretty solid as is at the moment, as that top 100 guy who you can get with a late pick along with Gallinari. I really like getting Gay in one of those later type of rounds. I don't see anyone being able to take that role away from him on this team. Is it going to be, are they going to play Davis Bertans at the three? Yes, Rudy Gay is more of a four, but Bertans is more of a four than what Gay is. Bellinelli playing the three, that's pretty ugly in terms of considering how that's going to work. DeMar DeRozan at the three, but again, you've lost a guard already. So if you're thinking about it, DeRozan probably has to play more at the one versus at the three this season. Spoke extensively about the DeJounte Murray injury yesterday and my thoughts about Derek White as the guy over someone like Patty Mills as someone you go and add, and I don't think it adds a huge amount to what DeMar DeRozan does. Marginal increases, but I still think his ADP is wildly above where his overall value ends, or he's on this team. Chetty Osman, another great late-round pick, 140 ADP on Yahoo, 179 as a rank. I think he's a top 100 guy. Ty Lue came out and said he is our primary wing defender, which means he is going to play a lot of minutes. Just think of Josh Richardson, who people don't think is very good, and they are wrong, but he is the Heat's primary wing defender, and he plays 31, 32, 33 minutes per night. Osman should be getting 30-plus minutes a night. He's going to be put onto the best wing player on the opposition. He can handle the ball. He can initiate offense. He can score. He can shoot. He is... I wouldn't say a lock for the top 100, but I'd say there's a better chance of him finishing top 70 than there is of him finishing outside the top 150. I love Chetty. He should not be sitting on any waiver wires at all, unless your league is a six-team league. And if you're ever in a six-team league or an eight-team league, you need to expand it. You need to get bigger. You need to go and just hit me up. If you want extra people in your league, tell me. I'll find them. There's, you know, I've got all these followers who are always looking for leagues. I can find them from many different spots. Let me know if you're looking for a couple of extra blokes to squeeze it into a 10 or ideally a 12-team league. But Osman is not someone who should be sitting on any waiver wires in any regular size leagues. His role is there. His minutes are there. You're going to be surprised at just how good this bloke actually is for this coming season. Let's look at another bunch of small forwards. My man Caris LeVert was absolutely fantastic yesterday. The blue swimmer Alan Crabb hurt his ankle. It's not a serious long-term thing, but it was a significant sprain. LeVert is averaging 16-5-5 with two steals across the preseason in only 28 minutes per game, and that makes him the 24th ranked player in preseason. Of course, that ranking is lofty, but 16-5-5 with two steals is not outrageous. The 29% usage probably is, so maybe you look at it as 13-5-5 is something that could happen. Him playing alongside D'Angelo Russell looked so good yesterday. Russell looked fantastic as well. LeVert's the best player on this team, in my opinion. I think that he is a top 100 guy and another guy who should not be on any waiver wires. He should be getting more minutes than Alan Crabb and Joe Harris and, honestly, Spencer Dinwiddie as well, who I don't think is a standard league guy. He's going to see minutes in the low 20s versus high 20s. The assists that he can provide are nice, and Russell can go down, but in the end, I think he's going to be a waiver wire fodder for the majority of this season. But I love what LeVert did. I love his ability to handle the ball. He can shoot, he can defend, he can do pretty much everything. The team is super high on him. He is showing it on the court, and all you have to do is go and watch that game yesterday to see just how good Caris can be, and I think you'll be convinced. Maybe not to the level that I am, but I think you'll be pretty happy with it. One thing I do want to talk about before I talk about Brandon Ingram here is, and I meant to talk about this earlier in the show, but I think it's important to know about biases that occur, and it's especially important in fantasy. And I talk about it all the time with revenge games or birthday games or contract year or all that sort of stuff, is that the only times that these things get mentioned is when there is a positive association with it. And then we use that to extrapolate it as a trend that can be put onto everybody. And the reason I want to say that is because we saw some big game, really big games from Miles Bridges earlier in the preseason, killing it. We saw Colin Sexton go out and put up some pretty big numbers. And people, man, Miles Bridges definitely going to get 30 minutes per night. He's going to be starting. He's going to cut into Batum's playing time. Jeremy Lamb's going to struggle now. We're going to have Bridges starting and playing all these minutes. Colin Sexton, definitely a guy who's going to be the best rookie in this class. And because they put up a couple of decent games. But then they come out and Bridges was absolutely shitful in the last game. And Colin Sexton had like 3 points as a starter. And these are the things that don't get mentioned. Because everyone looks at him and goes, man, big game, huge game, whoa, let's go. And then they go out there and do the sort of shit where you go, well, this is going to happen, and it's going to happen relatively consistently, and it gets ignored. So I think we do need to pay more attention and more attention to those sort of things. And yet, for Bridges for this preseason, for as good as he's been, he's still only the 127th ranked guy across the preseason, averaging 12-6 with less than an assist, 0.3 steals and half a block, and shooting out of his brain 50% from three, which is a number that's going to come down. And will he get to 24 minutes per game? Probably not. I think that might be a stretch for Bridges to get to that level. And it's important to be able to look at the good and look at the bad and understand that if you're only looking at when these guys have good games, you're going to be disappointed. So he had those first three games were good, 10-8, strong, 23-6, really good, ludicrous shooting, 14-6, ludicrous shooting, and then the last game, 2 points in 18 minutes on only three shots. Look, that's obviously not a good performance, and it is important to be able to realize that there are bad games that come along with the good games, and that's important to pay attention to. Yeah, I believe as well. And the same thing with Sexton, who had some pretty solid-ish type performances in the first couple of games, and enough where you looked at it and went, okay, he had 15-4 in the first game. Again, one assist in that game. 13-1-1 in the next game. And then he started and had 3 points, four rebounds, and three assists in 23 minutes. Overall, he's the 233rd ranked player in preseason in 22 minutes per game, averaging 10-3 and less than two assists on subpar percentages. It is important that you think about this and remember. And the reason I bring this up, because I want to talk about Brandon Ingram, who had a huge game the other day. Massive, massive game in the second half, especially when there was no Lonzo Ball, Rajon Rondo, or LeBron James. And he was running things as a point guard. Now, Yeah, people have said to me he's still playing on ball with those guys around, and that is true, but he's not getting the complete run of everything, and he won't get the complete run of everything. Yeah, when all those guys are back, I think that's fairly safe to say. Ingram still struggles in terms of getting threes and getting them at volume. He hasn't even hit a single three in this preseason. He's averaging 15-5 with under 2 assists and 1.5 steals. And the shot looks better: 56% on his 2-pointers, 74% on his free throws. But that game that he had, that everyone was really, really going the Dutch rudder on Ingram, he had 31-9-3 with 3 steals and a block. That's strong. The next game, 10 points, 1 rebound, 2 assists. 3 of 10 shooting, still hasn't hit a 3. He's only attempted 5 threes across 4 games, and that was the concern. He just doesn't hit many of them. So people looking, man, he's going to be a top 50 guy. He's going to be an all-star this season. Like, just calm down. We need to really pay attention and not go super hype on these guys because he's got long arms and he deflected 4 inbound passes in a row. That's really good, and Ingram, I think, can be a good player, but we have to look at it from a fantasy point of view. Is I've got him projected at some pretty big numbers, 19-5-3. I think he can up that scoring and get that usage up pretty high, increasing his usage rate this season, and being, we've heard LeBron talking him up a lot and the coaching staff and looking at him getting those shots. But he's not a high steals, high blocks guy, not hitting threes, poor free throw percentage, and the assists, I think he's going to struggle to generate those numbers. And if he's not playing on ball, he's not going to have the same level of production as what he would if he was exclusively the point guard, rather than sharing those duties with LeBron, Rondo, and ball as perhaps the fourth or maybe even the third ball handling option. It's just not the same for Ingram. So it is important to know that we all had that in the game where, yeah, we all got stiffies over it, and then the next game he was shitful. And that's the problem with Ingram is, when those other things change, and he's had, look, 2 good games and 2 real stinkers in the preseason, and we do need to pay attention to when that stuff averages out, it puts him outside the top 100. So don't be going overly aggressive on someone like Brandon Ingram, or I wouldn't be anyway. And if I have a look at his where's his draft details? Yeah, he's got an ADP of 85, so that's definitely coming in quite a bit. It's not bad at that zone, but people who are looking at him as being a top 50 guy, I think you're going to end up being disappointed. The blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, just a quick mention there. He did hurt his ankle. I think he's a low upside sort of a player who should get supplanted by Caris LeVert. He helps in threes. He had a bit of a boost in defensive numbers at the end of last season, which was useful for him. But I don't think he's someone who is 100% a must-own sort of a player for fantasy for this season. Let's talk about the pencil, Harrison Barnes, dealing with a hamstring. His ADP is too high. I've talked about this ad nauseum. 75 on Yahoo, 88 on Fantrax. I don't think he's a top 100 player. He wasn't a top 100 player for the last 3 months of last season. He now has to share the ball with DeAndre Jordan and Luka Doncic. He doesn't get rebounds, steals, blocks, assists. He's not a high field goal percentage guy, and his usage is going to drop. So I think I saw CBS rankings today that had him at 52, which is nonsense. So if you're on CBS, I apologize, because that is absolutely, and I haven't done anything on CBS rankings, so I don't think many people play there, but that's bullshit, and you should not be looking at him anywhere near that level, and I don't think that he is a top 100 player. Let's talk about the Fort Kevin Knox, who is locked in as the starting small forward for the Knicks. He's still ranked outside the top 130 in preseason in 28 minutes per game. He's averaging 10-7. And again, this is the concern with someone like Knox. He doesn't do enough in assists. He's averaging 1.5 steals, but no blocks, poor efficiency. The usage is 20%. People go, man, he's going to have 28, 29, get all the shots. I don't think that's going to be the case. The minutes will be fine. He is fine as a last round guy. But again, people get really excited about seeing these sort of performances in summer league from him, which came extraordinarily inefficiently, but on monster usage. And I didn't think he was going to be able to keep that up. He's had 2 double-doubles, 13-10 and 12-10, and then a 7-4 and 9-5. And his last game, he was 9-5 on 9 shots with a steal, no assists and no blocks. At this point, we have to assume the majority of rookies, maybe outside of Doncic and outside of Ayton, are going to be bad players. Talk about Ayton at the end of this week. He's been really, really impressive so far. But I just, these guys, Sexton and Knox in particular, they are low efficiency guys who don't produce in other areas, and it is going to be hard for them to be consistent fantasy producers. Absolutely no worries with taking them with the last pick, but just expecting too much out of these guys, I think, is going to lead to pretty significant disappointment if you're reaching inside the top 100, which of course you never should be doing for borderline guys like this. Let's talk some league pass now, looking at my my league pass rankings for this coming season. At number one, I've got the Philadelphia 76ers. I love watching, and this is all subjective, of course. I love watching Joel Embiid. I love watching Ben Simmons. Throw in the uncertainty of Markel Fultz now and what he's going to do. JJ Redick banging in threes. Dario Saric with his piss poor mustache doing what he needs to do. It's really the Simmons, the Embiid show, and now Fultz in there. To me, they're the number one team. And if you got the slate of early games, and again, the way I go to watch games is they come on, and then you've got, you know, two or three games in the early games. And if it's a team I haven't watched much recently, I'll go and watch that one. But if, say, it's a choice of games, and the Sixers are nearly always that early slot, I'm going to watch them. And I'll watch the first half, and I'll switch over to something else, and then come back, and all that sort of stuff. But they're going to be my first choice. Everything being equal, the Sixers are the team I want to watch. My second choice, and this hadn't really been the case before, is Los Angeles Lakers. I think they're really fun. I do like watching LeBron. Of course, how can you not like watching LeBron? I hate watching Lance Stephenson, and I don't like watching Rajon Rondo pretend to try on defense, but I love watching Lonzo Ball. Josh the Hitman Hart, Brandon Ingram, the future MVP Kyle Kuzma. Plus, there's a level of intrigue with this team. How is Svi Mykhailiuk going to play? Are we going to get Flaming Mo Wagner? How is this terrible medical staff going to screw things up for this team? That's and Mo Wagner, who apparently is still dealing with a knee bone bruise. And just a quick rant on the Lakers medical staff. That nonsense they had with Lonzo Ball last season is going to cost him a lot, and it's going to cost this team, because they brought him back from a knee injury and played him 40 minutes a night, and then he hurt his knee again, and now he's coming back apparently tomorrow today's game, whenever you're listening to this podcast, to play. But we're talking since March is the last time he played. It's ridiculous that they pushed him that far in absolutely meaningless scenarios at 40 minutes per game. That is bullshit. It is ludicrous. And now Josh Hart has a hamstring injury. Who knows how this medical staff is going to treat him. But they're fun, but they're also intriguing to see how this all works out. So I've got the Lakers at two. Number three, I've got the Denver Nuggets.
Pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
I've got him three because I want to watch Jokic. It's as simple as that. I love watching Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
I like watching the Blue Arrow. They're a fun, up-tempo, high-octane offense, and Jokic is one of the most fun players in the entire NBA to watch. I want to see how that works out. Can Michael Malone screw things up as well? But basically, it's about watching Jokic. It's about hoping that Will Barton doesn't hijack the offense, and watching Gaz and Jamal Murray go to work as well. At number four, it's the Utah Jazz. I want to see if this team can push to be that top four seed, like I said in yesterday's show. I want to see the Don. I want to see ravishing Rick Rubio. Yeah, Rubio has been one of my most favorite players to watch for many years, and now working with Donovan Mitchell, with Jingling Joe Ingles, one of the elite shit talkers in the NBA, and with a guy like Rudy Gobert out there as well, they're super fun to watch. They are a slower paced team, but they're elite defensively with a ton of fun players. Number five, speaking of fun, it's the Toronto Raptors and Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
Again, this is mainly intrigue. How is Kawhi going to do? I think this is the best team in the Eastern Conference. How is Kawhi, Kyle Lowry going to mesh together? Jonas Valanciunas, Pascal Siakam, Freddie VanVleet, Delon Wright, the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
There's tons of intrigue. How's Nick Nurse going to run this team? But there's just a lot of fun. A high energy, offensive and defensive team with one of the best perimeter defensive groups you will find in the NBA. Probably the best. And offensive creators and just fun players all over the place. Number six, it's the Milwaukee Bucks. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's seeing what Mike Budenholzer can do for this team. I like watching Brook Lopez, Chrissy Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, Malcolm Brogdon, solid. You got Matty Dellavedova pissing off 29 other fan bases if he ever gets into a game. Yeah, there's a lot to like, but it's mainly about Giannis, having him at number six. Number seven, it's the Dallas Mavericks, and that's because of Luka Doncic. I also really enjoy watching Dennis Smith Jr., and those two have worked sensationally well together. DeAndre Jordan, maybe not quite as fun, and Harrison Barnes, definitely not that fun to watch, but Dirk Nowitzki is always excellent to watch when he is out there. But it's really Doncic and Smith that I'm really interested to see, and I want to see Luka play as many times as possible this season. At number eight, it's Boston. There's just too many good players. Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown, Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier. There's just so many good players. How's it all going to work together? I want to see Kyrie integrating with these guys. I want to see Tatum take another step forward. So I've got the Boston Celtics at number eight on my league pass rankings. Number nine is the Indiana Pacers. That's pretty high for Indiana. It's mainly because of Victor Oladipo, but I want to see Tyreek. I think Tyreek's a fun guy to watch. Oladipo, love what he does defensively, offensively. I want to see Miles Turner, if he can bring it back. I want to see what Domantas Sabonis can do. I want to see Doug McDirt being the most one-dimensional player in NBA history. Yeah, lots to see with Indiana. Plus, again, a team that's looking to build on a surprise season. Number 10, it's the New Orleans Pelicans, Jrue Holiday, Anthony Davis, plus one of my favorite players in the NBA, Nikola Mirotic. How is Julius Randle going to fit in? Can he take a shot outside of 3 feet and hit it? That's a big question mark. But I really like seeing his playmaking and his transition play. There's a lot of fun on this team. Can Lord Alfred Payton resurrect his career after Phoenix completely shut it down? Well, he shut it down himself in Phoenix, to be more accurate, not putting the blame on the Suns for that one. At number 11, it's the Golden State Warriors. A couple of years ago, they'd be number one, but I'm just, not that I'm tired of it. There's just that when Curry sits, they're not as fun. When Steph's out there, he is probably top two in terms of fun players to watch in the NBA. You worry about their commitment every night. KD, for as good as he is, he's just not as fun as watching Steph play. Klay Thompson is fun. Draymond, you know, you love hating on a villain, even though I don't really see him as a villain that much. They're still a fun team to watch. The Clippers at number 12. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Patrick Beverley, Milos Teodosic when he gets in there. But the Rooster, Tobias Harris, the Table Montrezl Harrell, there's high-energy guys all over the place. There are fun guards in this team, and they're a team that I think is going to be competitive most nights. Number 13, I've got the Brooklyn Nets. I love the way they play. You know, the high three-point attempt rate. You're really D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Jarrett Allen, a lot of fun options there. Very few boring type of players. Ken Faried, maybe he's a guy that can provide some energy. Not sure how often he's going to play. Can we see development from Rondae Hollis-Jefferson as well? At number 14, the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's Russell Westbrook, really. Paul George is pretty okay to watch. I love Steven Adams as well, one of my favorite players in the league from New Zealand, obviously, but also one of the best, probably the best interview in the entire NBA. But it's just about Westbrook majority of the time. Seeing him go, you know, balls to the wall, the majority of plays, at least offensively. How is Dennis Schroeder going to fit in? I think that's a big question. Number 15 is Houston. They are more watchable than this. I love Jim Harden out there, but Carmelo Anthony can be a slog to get through. I like Clint Capela. I really enjoy Chris Paul. Maybe for intrigue level, I'd have them a bit higher to see how Melo fits in, to see what they do with Jim Ennis and Eric Gordon, but they're right in the middle of the pack. Number 16, the Atlanta Hawks. They're going to be terrible, but I want to see Trae Young. I want to see his passing, his shooting. I want to see the Baptist, John Collins. I want to see the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. Can Kevin Huerta step up? What are they going to do with DeAndre Bembry, a guy who's pretty fun for his position when he gets out there? So there's a lot of young, intriguing guys. 17 is the Miami Heat. If Jimmy Butler's on this team, I'd probably push them up a bit. I am assuming he is going to be there. Joshy Richardson, one of my favorite guys. Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk, I'd love to see them on the court more. Same with Jim Johnson, but I'm just not sure how that's all going to pan out with Hassan Whiteside around. They're fun to watch, but still there can be some slogs of games with them, especially when Justice Winslow is playing a lot of minutes. The Phoenix Suns at 18, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, we all want to see how that pans out. Josh Jackson can be an eyesore, but I want to see McCall Bridges. I want to see if Ryan Anderson can resurrect anything, but it's mainly Booker and Ayton, and hopefully this team can be more competitive than last season, and I think they will be, so that rises them up. 19 is San Antonio. How much mid-range shooting do I want to see between LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan and Rudy Gay and Jakob Poeltl and Marco Bellinelli? And without DeJounte, they lose a little bit of that fun factor. They're not terribly boring, and there's still a ton of intrigue there, but they're not the team that I'm flicking on to watch most of the time. Number 20, the Portland Trailblazers, just not much to really look at. Damian Lillard is really fun, but nothing much has changed from last season. Not much in terms of intrigue. El-Farouq Aminu, the Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He's nothing special. Zach Collins, I'm not sure how much he's going to play. Nurkic is okay at times. They're just a little bit ho-hum in terms of their watchability. And let's go on to the final 10. The Washington Wizards at number 21. John Wall, yeah, his passing is solid. I think I pushed them down to 21 because Dwight Howard is just so unfun to watch. Bradley Beal's pretty good. They're solid there. The Charlotte Hornets at 22, just a lot of boringness. Kemba's good, but who else is really intriguing at all? I like Batum, but he doesn't really get your watching juices flowing. 23 is Minnesota because I don't want to see a guy with a questionable comb over yelling at young men for 48 minutes in a row, especially now with this Jimmy Butler situation. You know what? I'd watch their first game just to watch the crowd boo the shit out of Thibodeau and Jimmy Butler. That would be interesting. Detroit at 24. Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond is a fun combination, but overall, it's just a bunch of nothingness in that backcourt. Apologies to you, Kyle, and other Pistons fans. 25 is the Knicks. If Porzingis was there, this would be higher. It's going to be interesting to see Kevin Knox, but I worry that Fizdale and his Lance Thomas infatuation is going to impact my enjoyment of this team. If Emmanuel Mudiay is playing, they're going to drop even further. The Grizzlies at 26, if Jaren Jackson Jr. Triple J is playing 30 minutes a night, then this bumps up because he's a fun player to watch. Mike Conley and Marc Gasol are pretty good, but it's just a bunch of weirdness. This team wanting to go in the opposite direction and slow things down and grind it out is not a fun viewing experience most of the time. At 27 is the Magic, and you know, my favorite player in the NBA is John Isaac for so many reasons. I just worry about this team's competitiveness. Not having a competent guard on the team could impact how these big men perform. If they go into that stage where Aaron Gordon's just launching threes and missing them all the time, that is a concern there. The Chicago Bulls at 28, the announcing team just kills it straight away. The complete lack of interest in defense, the apathy from Jabari Parker, the poor shot selection of Zach LaVine and Parker, the poor offense of Fred Hoiberg in not allowing the better players to play this, and now the injury to Lauri Markkanen, and they're at 28. The Cavs are 29th. The announcing team kills that. Kevin Love's interesting, but otherwise this team, apart from my man Chetty Osman and even Colin Sexton, who's interesting, there's just so much boringness on this team. And at 30, it's the Sacramento Kings. They're going to be the worst team in the NBA. Dave Joerger is going to piss us off with our rotations. That reminds me that Joerger has basically said the Kings are going to be running a nine-man rotation, and his starting lineup is going to be De'Aaron Fox, Frank Mason, Justin Jackson, not an NBA starter, Nemanja Bjelica at power forward, and Willie Cauley-Stein at center. With the Sticky Bandits, Marvin Bagley III and Harry Giles III coming off the bench, along with Budrick Hield and another player who I have completely forgotten who is the fourth player in that rotation. Oh, Yogi Ferrell. And that's going to be the nine-man rotation with Bogdan Bogdanovic coming back and taking Frank Mason's spot in the starting lineup when he returns. So they're still refusing to play Hield as a starter. Bagley and Giles are going to be coming off the bench so that 30-year-old Bjelica can go out there and start. And honestly, if you're going to start Bjelica, start him at small forward because Justin Jackson is not a good player and he is not a starting caliber player. You should start Hield and Bogdanovic. You should start Bjelica at the three, but you shouldn't be starting him. Now, interestingly, I don't find Bagley an all that intriguing prospect to watch. I think Giles is. I think Fox is interesting. I like Bogdanovic as well, but overall putting them down the bottom was not a hard decision for me. That'll wrap it up for today's podcast. We'll be back looking at award predictions for tomorrow as well as going through the power forward rankings power forward news for the season. But remind you guys to listen to Locked On NBA. We've got the season previews going at the moment. 6 teams a day, 5 days a week, 30 teams previewed from the local experts, from David Locke and from myself. So subscribe to Locked On NBA, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or tell your smart speaker to play the podcast Locked On NBA. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and go get yourself a Basketball Monster membership. Even if you've already drafted, Basketball Monster will help you with trade analyzers, smart tools, team analysis, schedule analyzers, all that stuff to help you get a winning season going. And of course, the DFS stuff, which is going to be opening up pretty soon for the 2018-19 season. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jamal Crawford.